We believe that being a defender requires more than building shooting skills on a range. It's also a development of the heart, mind, body, and spirit. Join us as we explore what it truly means to be a defender in your training and in your everyday life. Welcome to Defenders Live. Hello again. It's Wednesday night. My name is Laura Thorson, host of Defenders Live. Tonight in the green room, as always, we have Adam Winch, the founder of Defenders USA, and he will be behind the scenes, but he might chime in from time to time. We'll see what happens. So tonight, before we get into our special guest, I do have a tidbit of the week, guys. And this tidbit of the week is special to me because it was inspired by a good friend of mine last week who put a post up on Facebook talking about just being yourself. And how many times have you heard just be you? Just do you, right? Do we really know what that even means? I wanted to explore that a little bit more. And I wanted to like give you a little bit of a tidbit this week about how do you actually be yourself? So I believe, in my opinion, that whenever we're on the range and we're shooting, right, we have a series of steps that we myelinate and processes that we go through, right? And I've seen on the line time and time again shooters that have no problem duplicating a process. But you can tell the ones that really understand how to develop a feel. Do you guys know what I'm talking about? Shout out in the comments if you know what I mean. Most people can duplicate a process, but very few people can develop a feel. And I believe that truly being yourself requires operating on a feel. Now, if you're in the horse world, and I know some of you viewers are also a horse girl too, or horse guy maybe, and you've heard this term operating on a feel. It's not like anything new under the sun. But I've recently tied this in with being yourself. And here's what I have to say about that. There are three things that I believe that will help steer you towards operating on a feel in order to go deeper within yourself to be better for yourself and for your loved ones by being yourself, by just being you. Number one, pay attention. Have you ever been on the line shooting or in practice and you're just going through the motions? Your brain is not connected to your body and you know you need to reconnect it. Well, the only way you can do that is first you have to pay attention to realize and have an awareness of yourself that you even are just going through the motions anyway, right? Have you ever done this in shooting? Are you doing this in your everyday life? Pay attention to your gut feeling. When you are being a version of yourself, or when you're putting on a front, it feels different, does it not, than when you're having coffee with your best friend and your guard is down and you're just being yourself? Pay attention to that. Pay attention to that voice in your head that when you start thinking more about yourself than others, when you start focusing on shifting your focus inward rather than how can I be of service to others, that entire attitude is a different feeling. Right? So pay attention to how that feels. When you're being true to yourself and to others, you should be filled up with joy. And when you're truly doing what God has designed you to do and what you're here to do, it will feel different. Okay? So pay attention to those subtle cues, just like you do in shooting, right? And just like in shooting, deliberate practice is important. I am in a weekly exercise of showing up for you guys, okay? More showing up better and more than I ever have before. And I have to make sure and keep myself in check that my compass is truly pointed north as I'm doing this, that my intentions are to help you and not to serve myself. And so your dry fire practice in being yourself should be checking in with yourself and not running on autopilot in your life. How many times in the course of a day could you check yourself and realize you're running on autopilot, okay? So there's a lot of things we learn in shooting, guys, that we can apply to everyday life. I say this all the time, but there are so many parallels that if we just pay attention, we can pick up on this stuff and we can be better. Number two, don't use it as an excuse. Be careful not to use, oh, I'm just being myself. I can't be anything else. Don't use that as an excuse to not try to be a better version of yourself. Always strive to try to be a better version of yourself. Stand firm in who you are and what you believe, and also know that being you isn't about searching outside yourself for anything. You're never going to arrive. And so stop trying to search for the thing. There is no thing, right? You have been there all along. No matter where you go, there you are. Have you heard that before? No matter where you go, there you are. So there is no searching or arriving outside of yourself to find that. You never left. And where you need to look is not out there. It's in here. And just like shooting, once you've shot enough, you know the right feel. You know when everything is perfect and you can make that perfect shot. If you've ridden horses enough, you know the right feel because you've practiced it. So practice in your everyday life, learning that groundedness and living in that space of knowing yourself well enough to be yourself. Last thing, being you is a true gift. View it as a gift. Being yourself should feel good in your heart, in your soul, in your consciousness, and it's something that no one can do but you. It's a true gift, so you should embrace it. You should run with it even. You should celebrate it. And know when you strip all of life's BS away, when you strip all of life's conformities, ideas, outside voices, and influences, deep down, there you are. You have a gift that no one else has, so protect your gift and use it for good. That is all I have to say about that. Off my soapbox. All right, so let's get on with the live, the reason that you're here tonight, to talk to a wonderful man, Mike Williver. Mike is from the Ask podcast, and he's a team member of Active Self-Protection. And I don't know Mike personally, so I'll be learning a lot of things along with you. And Mike, I'm going to bring you on now. Welcome to the show, my friend.
It's so good to be here. I really enjoyed that tidbit. That's good stuff. And I would add one thing to that, which is from a Christian perspective, is if you seek out and ask God for your spiritual gift in life, whatever that might be, mm-hmm. He will let you know what that is. It may not come right away, but it will come with time. And I think, like, for me, I'm pretty sure God has me on earth to encourage people and to build people up. So that's what I try to do. And in that vein, I think you're doing a great job. That was a phenomenal open. I'm inspired. I want to go out and do some stuff now. I don't even know what I want to do. I want to do something.
I'm so glad to hear that. That felt good too. So I knew I was in the right space when I was doing it. So that makes me feel good inside. All right. So, but let's talk about you, Mike. First of all, okay. I have something I have to get off my chest. There's all these terms about video cast, podcast, blah, blah, blah. Is a podcast audio only, or is it video only, or is it, it can be both? Like, the definition, do you know?
Yes.
It can be whatever.
It could be either one. Yeah. Plenty of podcasts have a video aspect to them. A lot of still are audio only. Mine's audio only for a bunch of reasons. This is something we've been talking about quite a bit. Actually, me, Neil, John, and Steph have been talking about the possibility of going to video. We're still talking about it because there's quite a few of my guests that, for reasons you can understand, don't want their face on the internet. Mm-hmm. A lot of my guests don't want to use their full name. Now, I do my best to verify their story to make sure they're not, you know, making something up. But the fact is, you know, especially some of the female guests, there's male entanglements that are part of their problems they were having, the reason they had a defensive encounter. And for that reason, I tend to use a lot of times just first names at their request. And that's the reason we haven't done it yet. We're thinking about maybe getting some, you know, some people who don't mind being on video and just putting some clips maybe up on the extra channel, but that's still a work in progress.
Yeah,
so right now, mine's
sense.
Audio only.
Yeah, that makes sense. Well, I had a debate with a friend of mine about the definition of a podcast, and even Google was contradicting what it was. So I thought I'd just ask you. Yeah, imagine that.
Sure.
So tell me about the evolution of the Ask podcast. What is it? What's its purpose? What's its mission? We want to hear all about it.
Yeah. So I went to John. The timing's starting to get fuzzy for me now, but probably about a year before I retired. I retired in June of 21. And John and I always knew I would come to work at Active Self-Protection in some form or fashion. We just didn't know what it was going to be as an instructor or what. And so we started with the podcast. At first, you know, we weren't sure what we were going to talk about. We thought maybe we'll somehow he and I might discuss the video of the week or something like that. But it ended up, we landed on it, I think, a good place to land on, which is interviewing people that have been in defensive encounters. That's the vast majority of the episodes, and discussing with them the before, during, and after. So what I mean by that is, before they were in a defensive encounter, had they done any training? Frequently there's law enforcement officers, so we will discuss their training, but for private citizens, for self-defenders, we ask, hey, did you grow up in a household that had firearms, or did you grow up around that sort of self-defense mentality or not? Did you come to that as an adult? Frequently our guests have no experience with self-defense. They just found themselves in a bad spot. And so we'll have them come on, the idea being that our listeners can learn something from their experience. I have a feeling, you get demographics about your show, about who's listening or who's watching in your case. And all I know is male, female, other, and then what country, what country they're in. That's basically all I got. So mm-hmm. I don't know the experience levels of the listeners, but it seems to be working, that it's doing really, really well. So my goal is talk about the before. The during's important, right? What happened to you? Where were you? What were you doing? That sort of thing. What was your mindset like? But I really like to focus on the aftermath. That's the part that a lot of the 2A community doesn't really focus on, is what happens after. Now, my buddy Adam, Adam Winch, he's shadowy, he's in the background somewhere. I don't know where he is. I listened to him give a speech at the Active Self-Protection National Conference after a really outstanding class that I think, had the people paid their money just to get that one class, it would have been money well spent. But after the class, he gathers the group up, and I'm sure he gives a speech other places, but he talks to them about, you got to prepare your heart. You have to have a conversation with yourself about, am I prepared to do what needs to be done? If you're just coming here and pew, 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 and shoot, taking some pictures for the gram, you're not mentally, you're not spiritually prepared to be in a defensive encounter to potentially shoot someone. And that speech blew me away. In fact, I talked to John, Neil, and Steph, and if he's back next year, God willing, he'll give that speech to the entire conference at the beginning of the conference to get their mindset right. So the after part for me, I focus on the investigation. So whether you're law enforcement or self-defender, hey, what happened when the cops show up? Did you talk to the cops? Was that a good idea to talk to the cops? The investigation for a police officer, a law enforcement officer, did they take your gun away? Did they give you another one? All that sort of thing. Did you give a statement at the scene, or did you have a union rep? And then we talk about other things like the legal aftermath. We've had some defenders who've gotten themselves in hot water, frequently through no fault of their own, but they end up getting arrested and they end up in jail and they end up having to defend their freedom in the legal system. And that can be very, very precarious. So, that frequently that will carry over into, hey, do you have some sort of legal membership, that you avail yourself of? We have Firearms Legal Protection as one of our sponsors. Mm-hmm. But I tell people, go to FLP, go wherever you got to go, but research it, find a good company and get some insurance so that you know you have an attorney to call. And then we talk a lot about PTS. PTS is, and I leave the D off advisedly, it's not a disorder. PTS is a very natural response to being in a defensive encounter, to being in a violent encounter, especially one you weren't anticipating. So we talk about how it might manifest itself. And PTS is different for everybody. None of the symptoms are new, nothing's new under the sun as far as that goes, but how and when they manifest themselves can be very different from person to person. Something as simple as, you're just some mom going to work and dropping the kids off at school, and you end up having to be in a gunfight you weren't expecting. What was it like afterwards? How did people view you? When you go to the PTA meeting, mm-hmm. Do you get funny looks? Like certain things that I think most other people just aren't talking about. I want to get that stuff out there into the public eye. So that's basically what the podcast is about in a nutshell.
And talk a little bit more about you and your background too, because you have quite a background before coming into active self-protection. Is that right?
Yeah, I was a police officer in a couple of small departments back east. And I joined the feds in 96 with the former Immigration Naturalization Service, the INS, as an investigator. And I've done various and sundry jobs. We combined with Customs in 2003 and we became ICE. And then we became HSI, Homeland Security Investigations. And so as a result, I've stayed with the same agency for 25 plus years. And I think I have 5 different badges in a case to show off to people, because the government likes to waste your money. So if they have a PR problem of being called ICE and having the word immigration in their title, they change their name to something else, and then they spend millions of dollars to change the raid jackets and the letterhead and the badges and everything else. And it's kind of ridiculous, but that's, I'm getting far afield. So I worked everything from immigration, basic immigration investigations, to transnational gangs. Street gangs in Southern California is a big issue, as most people probably know. I worked on international, transnational narcotics, both in the sort of small frame of working actual just border bus cases where someone crosses the border with dope and you arrest them and you investigate it that way, all the way up to other kinds of investigations, which will remain unnamed, that involved transnational cartels. But a lot of fun. I enjoyed it. People thank me for my service. I thank them for paying me for 25 years and into perpetuity. I had a great time doing it. If there's any cops watching, the piece of advice I always give to especially to younger law enforcement officers is, this is a job. It's a great job. It's an important job and a job you should take seriously, but it's not your identity. So, you know, if for whatever reason you get medically retired, or for whatever reason you don't make it through field training, or for whatever reason you, when you retire, you have that weird, you know, oh my God, I'm not a cop anymore thing. That's to be avoided. You know, it's an honorable profession. Do it honorably. Protect your community and your partners as best you can, but it's just a job. And if the job doesn't work out, or you don't stay with it forever and ever, that's okay. There's other things to do that are just as honorable as law enforcement.
I think Adam had something he wanted to say. Hi, Adam.
Okay. There. So, Mike, I want to pick on what you said about cops for it's just a job, right? Because too many of us in the law enforcement world made it an identity. And it, in a sense, it gets in the way. But could we say the same thing for the gun training crowd, that for those of us in the gun world, maybe we're not law enforcement, but now we're in the gun training crowd, that sometimes we let that identity take over so much that it takes away from maybe our ability to fully enjoy life as we're meant to be?
Yeah, I think that carries over as well, Adam. Well said. It carries over into the self-defender community, as far as I'm concerned. I think some people, it becomes so much a part of their identity as being, you know, a CCW holder and training and everything else, that it kind of, it excludes other parts of their life, and it shouldn't. Yeah. You know, your God and your family, I don't care what you do for a living, or whether you're a self-defender or not, God and family come first and everything else comes after that. You know, Adam can back me up on this. A lot of cops get so engrossed in the job, they do neglect their wife, they neglect their husband and their kids, and their life becomes a shambles. And how many cops, you know, they get divorced at 45 years old, because they're so engrossed in their work that they neglect the other things in life. And I think that can also happen to just regular old self-defenders who get sort of caught up in the scene and in the world of, you know, 2A stuff and CCW and self-defense. Those things are all noble pursuits, but don't let that become your identity. Being a self-defender, being a person who will stand in the breach, being a law enforcement officer, same thing. You're someone who is self-identified as someone who's willing to step in and potentially sacrifice your life to save third parties, to save innocent people. And that's admirable.
And it seems like the life lesson behind what you're saying is that this could do anything, right? Let's say you're practicing law, you're a bookkeeper, you're a baker, a truck driver, it doesn't really matter. If we allow the other things that are far less important, especially the occupation, occupy our mental and emotional space, that it takes away from the family and from your God and everything else. I think there's a beautiful life lesson in what you said and relating it to cops, but I think it translates across the board. And I just want to thank you for that.
Sure. Yeah. And I think, I mean, I would argue that it's worse with cops than maybe some other groups of people, or cops and military maybe, where they really identify with their job. Yeah. To an unhealthy degree. But yeah, it could happen to anyone. It could happen to a baker. It could happen to Tony the truck driver. You know, it could be anybody.
Okay. All right. So do you want me to take you off then, Adam?
I'm good.
Okay. I never know.
I miss him already.
I do too. Yeah. Let's see here. So let's get into, since we know about the podcast and we know a little bit more about you, then let's get into the meat of really some of the things that our audience can take away from some of the interviews. So do you have a most memorable interview that you can think of that you've had with somebody that had a very pivotal moment or a big lesson that people really need to take away?
Yeah, I think so. There's several that leap to mind. I think the overwhelming point of most of these interviews is that people frequently don't see the thing coming, or more importantly, people get a red flag, or they, you know, something pops up and they're like, that's just not quite right. And that normalcy bias kicks in, and mm-hmm. they want to believe it isn't happening. They want to wish it away. Our CEO, Stephanie Widener, was giving a class at last year's conference that I was attending about women's self-defense, mainly women's self-defense. And what she says is, if you're in a, you know, if something is about to happen or is happening, you need to radically and rapidly accept reality. Like, the most important thing you can do, and this is true for most of the interviews I've done, is, and the example I always give is this: if you're a high school kid and you're sitting in chemistry class and you hear loud bangs in the hallway, understand that that's not fireworks. Nobody is setting off fireworks in the hallway of your school. If it is fireworks, okay, whatever. It's probably a gunman. It's probably a school shooter. So your best bet is to immediately accept that and act accordingly. What do I mean by that? So if you have a plan for an active shooter, implement it and get going. If you can jump out a window, jump out a window, whatever it might be. So many of my guests have come on and said, you know, I had three or four red flags that told me I shouldn't go through that door. I shouldn't do this thing. I shouldn't go upstairs in this apartment building. And they did it anyway, only to realize they were right. That sense that was telling them don't do it is absolutely true. So with that said, probably one of the highest rated episodes I had was Stephen Williford, the hero of Sutherland Springs. I'm sure a lot of your viewers are familiar with him. He interrupted a church shooting in his small town. Oh, we have dogs. Apologize if you hear the dogs.
It's okay.
Excuse me. So Stephen came on graciously and told his story. And my big takeaway from his story is it can happen here. Wherever you are, it can happen there. Carrie Dudenhofer, another good friend of mine, didn't have an incident happen to her, but it turns out this guy that was ended up killing and mutilating a family, including children, had stalked her kids' dance classes, you know, in this little town in Washington. So it can happen here. It can happen to you. I think as a self-defender or just as someone walking down the street, if you have the mindset, yeah, it can happen to me, it can happen here. Sutherland Springs is a dot on the map in Texas, like 600 residents total. And it's only because Mr. Williford was on call that day as a commercial plumber, an industrial plumber, that he wasn't at church. He was going to be at his church way down the road. But he was on call, so he couldn't go to church. So he's home, and this thing kicks off, and he rapidly and radically accepted reality. His daughter says, someone's shooting up the church. And he didn't go, are we sure? I wonder. We should call the police, or I should poke my head up. Nope. He grabbed his AR and a handful of ammo and got to work, and he saved a lot of lives that day. The most impactful part of that for me was evidently there was one young man who was already been shot apparently with a rifle. And he was down in between a couple of pews, and the gunman is walking up to him with a pistol, getting ready to finish him off. In that moment, Stephen Williford's running across the street and he screams, and he said it wasn't his scream. He credits God. God was calling out a demon, quite literally. Like, he screamed, which is not tactically smart to do. If you're trying to sneak up on an active shooter, you want to be quiet and let him know you're coming. But when he screamed, that man didn't shoot that individual and turned to face Mr. Williford. Wow. And that gave me chills when I heard that. That's powerful stuff. Yeah. Another really important episode for me was a woman who was just in her home and with a partner, with a companion, and a person quite literally burst through the front door. And it was like a studio cabin type of a deal. It's just one big room with a bathroom, I guess. And someone, I can't remember what time it was 8 a.m, they're in bed, half asleep, burst through the door. Now, how much more rapidly and radically do you have to accept something's happening than you're sleepy, you're wiping the sleep boogers out of your eyes, and there's a person standing right in front of you. Fortunately, she was prepared. You know, she knew what to do. She had a firearm to defend herself and was able to repel that attack, and that person ended up passing away. What is important to me about her story in particular is, she reached out to me after listening to an episode of the podcast. And this makes me beam with pride every time I talk about it. Mm-hmm. She heard John Dobb, who was another person on the podcast, who had a not dissimilar situation where someone broke down his door and he had to defend himself with a fire. And when she listened to him tell his story on the podcast, something in her clicked. She heard something that sounded familiar and she realized, oh, wait a minute. I'm not crazy. You know, I didn't lose my mind. The things I'm feeling, the feelings I'm feeling, the responses I'm having to stimuli, the sort of PTS symptoms that are manifesting themselves are perfectly normal. And she told me that on the show, and I almost cried. I was so happy to hear that healing moment had happened in her life. Mm-hmm. And she was then moved to come on the show and tell her story, which is incredible. There are a lot of stories. I love them all. Some are more or less compelling than others, but if someone would have told me I'd be at this a year ago for a whole year and be starting a second season and it would be taking off the way it did, I wouldn't believe them. Because, as you know, being relatively new to this stuff, mm-hmm. I said, John, let's do a podcast. And he's like, about what? And then we figured it out. And then all of a sudden I'm like, okay, how hard could this be? I'll just record myself talking to someone and you throw it on the internet. Well, it turns out it's not that easy. In the words of Jeremy Clarkson, how hard can it be? Well, it can be very hard. And it was a lot more learning curve than I had anticipated. So, you know, what computer to get, what recorder to get, what microphone to get, how to distribute it, how do you get an Apple podcast, all that sort of thing. But no, I'm stoked. I think as a team, I have great people working for and working with me. Soleil Roche will get me guests. People will write it in and go, hey, I had a thing happen. And she'll shoot them over to me and we get it worked up. So yeah, it's going well. I'm having a blast.
Well, I'm so glad that you're doing what you're doing. And we had a great talk. I can't remember. I lose track of time so easy. I don't know if I talked to you 2 days ago or 2 weeks ago. But anyway, we talked. And we had a great discussion just about what you're kind of describing about kind of being new to this and learning all of this as you go. It's sometimes overwhelming and challenging, but so rewarding, don't you think? It's just so rewarding and worth it.
My imposter syndrome is not 100% cleared up, but I think anyone doing something like this suffers from at least a little bit of that. And if you don't, I think maybe you will fool yourself. And frequently for me, you might experience this as well. I come on the show, I'm not really sure what we're going to talk about. And you ask a question and off I go to the races for a 5-minute answer. That imposter syndrome is very real. But, you know, mm-hmm. once you get me going, I'm comfortable. I'm like, okay, yeah, I do know some things about some things. And I have some intelligent things to say. Not always. Just ask John.
I just admit when I don't know things, you know. I mean, we're just real human beings. I think that's what people care about. They just want to see real people, you know? So.
Yeah, it's 100% a superpower to say, first of all, to mind your own business. That's always nice. But more importantly, when I don't know something, you know, I was a Fed for 25 years and a cop before that. There's plenty of things I don't know that and I'm happy to say to my kids, I don't know. Usually I know the things my kids ask me. Sometimes I don't. And when I don't, I'm like, I don't know. And I think, mm-hmm. I think that's a great way to be. And honestly, watching you doing this and being in the phase that you're at reminds me of where I was, you know, a few months back when I was getting started. And I'm going to start watching now and paying attention and watching your development. But I think you're going to do great. I think you're killing it already. That tidbit was spot on.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that. Well, let's move on here because I want this to be about you. So whenever you are gathering these lessons, right, from these people who have gone through real life violent encounters, do you think that there's something recurring that most people miss in the process of thinking about a violent encounter? Is it the fact that, they don't think it's going to happen to them and they don't have that mindset of thinking of realizing that it actually could? Or is it something else?
Yeah, I wish I could take notes because there's three answers to that question. One, most prominent one is red flags and ignoring them. You know, if something's telling you don't go through that door, don't go through that door. If something's telling you that person might be about to rob me, listen to that. And the thing is, if you listen to it, you turn around and go away and don't get robbed, what's the harm? You know what I mean? You're 10 minutes late to go to the store to buy steak and eggs or whatever you're going to buy. So that's number one. Number two, I think, is most people fail to consider the aftermath of something like this. I think everyone wants to imagine, you know, they stand in the breach and they stand tall and they shoot the bad guy. And it's, first of all, it's 100% justified. It's 100% clear to the investigators what happened and that you're justified in doing what you did. And they don't think about what's going to happen after. Am I going to get arrested? Mm-hmm. Am I going to get prosecuted potentially? We had a guy in recently, just as an example, and he was at the bus stop waiting for his daughter with a neighbor who had a car. Our guy was armed, legally armed. And for the sixth time in as many months, his daughter was not on the bus. A 6-year-old, 7-year-old, I can't remember, a young girl is not on the bus. And the neighbor's kid isn't on the bus either. They got on the wrong bus or the school lost him or whatever. And so thinking, oh no, my daughter's missing. He jumps in the car, goes down to the school and raises some cane with the administration, expressing his displeasure. And the police were called for an unrelated reason. And they didn't apparently like his hooting and hollering too much. So when he's putting his daughter in the car, when he finally found her, he leans over to buckle her in, and a little bit of his concealed Kydex holster is revealed to an officer standing behind him, who promptly arrests him for carrying a gun on school grounds, which is a BS discretionary arrest. The cop was mad because he didn't like this guy's attitude. This is my opinion, of course. It turns out under the law in his state, as long as he wasn't brandishing it, he might have been okay legally to be where he was. So I think for me, it's people miss red flags, or more importantly, they ignore red flags. Mm-hmm. And they don't consider what might happen after they, most especially after they deploy a firearm. You know, I'll say this on the show all the time. What happens after you deploy a firearm as a private citizen will depend largely on the investigating officer or detective, and, you know, potentially their view of the Second Amendment. And not a lot, but some cops don't think that everyone should be carrying guns. So they have mm-hmm. a personal thing. So they might be looking a little harder to put you in a bind than they might be someone else. And you have to consider the prosecutor, and you have to consider the judge. If you have an anti-2A prosecutor, which we have all over the place now, they might go out of their way to pursue a charge against you that they might mm-hmm. not otherwise, if it's something other than a firearm. So having some kind of legal protection ahead of time is critical. Pay attention to red flags is critical, and consider what might happen after. And we talk about mental reps a lot on the show and on the podcast. You know, listening to my podcast will hopefully give you a mental rep. It'll put you mentally in a position that someone else has already been in. You can consider options. You consider what you might do to avoid that situation, or what you might do in that situation, and hopefully learn lessons from listening to the show. That's why most people watch, you know, the Act of Self-Protection YouTube channel and the Extra channel, is because they're trying to get a mental rep in. Two things are important: mental reps. Okay. Obviously actual training is super important, but things you can do for free: dry fire, right? Mm-hmm. Mental reps, and considering the outcome of a situation. And if you get these mental reps, and you might, more importantly, you might end up avoiding being in a situation in the first place. Mm-hmm. And isn't that the ideal thing, is to avoid being in something? I don't mean not intervening in something if you're needed, but I mean, if you're walking down the street and you see a couple of really scary looking guys and they're eyeballing you, you don't want to consider turning around before you get too close and avoid that thing altogether. So mm-hmm. those are the main takeaways that I get from listening to my guests.
Yeah. Common sense goes a long ways, but not everybody chooses to exercise it for some reason.
Some don't possess it, I think.
Yeah, I agree. So let's move on here to, I'm kind of curious about this. So you interview law enforcement and civilians, right? That have gone through encounters. Yes. Okay. Correct. So do you see any distinction at all between the mindset perspective of a law enforcement officer versus a civilian? Or is there not much of a difference?
No, I think it definitely depends. You know, mm-hmm. some cops, and Adam can testify to this, some cops go through their career thinking it'll never happen to them, and they're not mentally prepared, and they haven't had that conversation with themselves. Am I ready to deploy lethal force if necessary to defend myself and others? Am I ready to go through the investigation and everything else? And they kind of wish it away. That's real. That happens in law enforcement, unfortunately. But I think for the most part, the difference for me would be between self-defenders, cops, put those in one basket of people who are considering their own protection. You know, they're considering mm-hmm. their own self-defense, and they're training for it, and they're preparing for it mentally and physically. Mm-hmm. And the people I have in my show who that wasn't really ever a thought. They just sort of lived in a, you know, in a place where they felt they could just kind of live their life. And I think most people don't think about it, or if they start to think about it, they find it unpleasant, so they stop thinking about it, or they push it out mm-hmm. of their mind. So I think mm-hmm. the people that that weren't in any kind of self-defense mindset is in one basket. Then the prepared self-defenders and people who have trained and prepared, and cops, are in another. But then there's, like I said, there's the law enforcement aspect. I know I've worked with some people that I question their dedication to the job. You know, there's cops who barely qualify with their gun. They do the bare minimum mm-hmm. to get by. They don't seek out training on their own. So those guys are dangerous kind of for everybody. They're dangerous for the community and for their partners and themselves. I always say on the badge cams, if you know you're not ready to do what you have to do as an LEO, you need to quit mm-hmm. or need to start training and change your mindset. And again, I'm sure Adam backed me up on this. There's plenty of cops who let themselves get way out of shape on the job, or, you know, they skip the range as many times as they can. And when we watch these videos on the main channel, these badge cam videos, some of these shots these officers have to make are not easy. There's a hostage involved, or there's a weird angle. There's somebody up on a balcony they have to shoot at, or whatever. And I can't say enough how important your marksmanship skills, but more importantly, your confidence in your own marksmanship skills are, whether you're a private self-defender or in law enforcement, getting that training in is important. So there's those three groups. There's the cops who don't care. I'm sure Adam has something to say about that. And then there's the private citizens who just don't consider it, and or they push those thoughts out of their mind. Then in the middle, we have our self-defenders who train and our cops who train and actually are serious about what they do.
Yeah, Mike, you said something pretty interesting here. When I've done research on cops shootings and the ones that I've seen or been involved in, it seems like the accuracy rate of the standard police officer is so low that to me it's chagrining, right? It's sad to see. What is something we can do to not only increase the accuracy rate of the civilian defender, but maybe even to also reach out to the cops and be like, hey, look, maybe come to some good training out there versus the standard stuff that's just for post that's out there. What can we do to entice both groups to come to more training? Because I think that's important. And furthermore, what can we do to also help people more prepare for the mental and the emotional aftermath, right? We talk about FLP or Firearms Legal Protection. You guys sponsor that. We do too. But also the soul aftermath, you know, what's something you tell people to prepare them for the aftermath of those days?
Well, when it comes to cops, first of all, I meant what I said earlier. I think you should tape that talk that you give at the end of your class, and it should be presented at every police academy across the country, because you crystallize in about 5 minutes worth of a really good speech the things that are missing in most people's training regimen, the things that are missing in most people's level of emotional, physical, and spiritual fitness. As far as encouraging cops to train more, I think someone needs to give them that speech and be like, if you're not taking this seriously, you need to step away or go do something else, or consider getting a desk job or whatever it is you have to do. Because every minute you're out there on the street as a law enforcement officer and you're not prepared mentally, physically, and spiritually to do what you have to do, you're no longer a protector. You're a detriment to your community. You're a detriment to your department, to your partners. And so John thinks I'm a little hard on my fellow cops sometimes on the main channel, but it's absolutely true. And I think another thing I want to address, and I don't know if this is the same other places, but you know, as a former firearms instructor with my agency, there were times when I saw agents and officers and task force officers who I did not feel comfortable signing off on their proficiency. What does that mean? You can get all the dots, you know, you can get all the rounds right where they need to be, roughly, you know, maybe a shotgun pattern, but you pass, you got a 201 out of 250, just enough to qualify. There needs to be a mechanism through which I, as an instructor, can be protected from retaliation. If I say, you know what, Adam, God love you, I want to help you, but I'm taking your gun right now. You don't get to carry a gun anymore because I'm not confident in your proficiency, your overall proficiency in your mindset or whatever. There needs to be a way that I can do that as a trainer and then come alongside you and go, okay, you're off your assignment for 2 weeks and we're going to go and we're going to work on you if you want to do that. Or you can quit. It's entirely up to you. I think a lot of trainers in law enforcement are afraid to take that nuclear option of taking someone's gun away. I don't know if you've seen that in your time as a trainer in LE, but I've seen it a few times where I saw somebody with a shotgun in my shotgun class that I developed from the ground up because my agency was a little lackluster on the shotgun training. I'm a big fan of the 12 gauge. And so I create this class and I had a guy come through and he passed the class, right? He got everything that he needed to get done, but he was shaking like Katherine Hepburn on a hayride the entire time. He was dropping rounds and fumbling, and his transitions to his pistol were terrible. And I just took a chance and I'm like, look, you qualified, right, dude? But do you feel like you're ready to hit the street with a shotgun? And he said, not really. Yeah. I don't really think that. I go, good. Give it to me. Come back here next week. We'll work here. We'll do 40 hours of training. And he came back with a good attitude and did that 40 hours of training. And he was switched on. He was just unsure of himself. And I think that option in law enforcement needs to be exercised more often. That brings me to another point about training and students. You probably know this already, both of you, but there's two kinds of students you're going to have to spend more time with. There's students who are uninterested and unwilling to learn. And there's students who are struggling. I love struggling students. I adore yes. struggling students, coming alongside them and helping them figure it out, you know. And you've seen it, I'm sure. You see that light bulb go off over their head and they're like, oh, you know. And I, for example, I've had bad days at the range. As an instructor, you have to score much higher than the average agent, right? So I'm at the range one day and I'm shooting just a basic qualification course and I am tanking it. I mean, I am I'm not even shooting the minimum qualification score. So 250 is perfect. I usually score 245 to 250. I wasn't scoring 200 that day. And I'm getting, you know, gets in your head. You get more frustrated. Like, why am I doing? What's going on? And so I had another instructor come over and just watch me shoot. And I get done with a 25-yard line. And he says, Willover, you're holding your breath. I'm like, what? I'm not holding my breath. Get out of here. You know, when you tell a student something's going on, and then you got to videotape them to prove to them that that's actually what's happening. You're like, no, really.
When denial. You go to defeat
your retention on your SS3, you're coming down. You're defeating your retention. You're coming back up. You're establishing a firing grip. You're coming out. You're a mess. And he said, no, you're not. You're holding your breath. Once you get the gun out and on target, you're holding your breath. Well, I had no idea. Look, I'm not comparing myself to Tom Brady, right? But even Tom Brady needs a coach. You need someone to come alongside you and watch you and help fix your deficiencies. And like I said, man, nothing made me happier than a struggling student who wanted to get better and was willing to learn. And the big problem with teaching cops, Adam, you can back me up on this, is they already know everything. There's nothing they can possibly learn from you. There's nothing worse than getting in front of a room full of cops who aren't interested in learning from you. I would say, look, you got to empty your cup. Try to pour tea in your teacup, dude. Your cup's already full and it's just spilling out over the sides. So do me a favor, empty your cup. Let's start over from scratch. I do miss the instruction element. I've been kind of out of that for a while since I retired, so I'm looking to get back into that at some point. Maybe I'll come up and take one of your classes, Adam. I'm willing to slump over a few days.
I would love to have your brother come up anytime. Laura, I'll get out of here. Thanks, Mike.
All right. We are moving, Mike, through this hour. Like, I'm not even getting to half the questions I had, but that's okay. This is good stuff. I really appreciate you being on tonight. This has been fun.
That's my now, pleasure.
I was thinking of something. I had to write it down while you were talking. When we were talking about the different buckets of people that you were saying, the self-defenders and LEO were in a bucket, and then people that just had no idea that this could ever happen to them were kind of in another right. bucket. When you look at the survivor bucket of the people that you've interviewed, are there certain characteristics of survivors that you see that also do as well as one can in surviving the aftermath? Do you notice any particular characteristics in those people?
So I guess the question is, do I see a characteristic or a set of similarities between people who first have an encounter and then sort of the aftermath goes as well as it can go versus people who have a harder time?
Right. They not only survived physically, right, but afterwards they were able to at least not have everything fall apart on them, right?
Yeah, that's a tough one to answer, honestly, because I definitely don't want to show any disrespect to any of my guests, because I have tremendous respect for all of them. But there are people, I think mainly it's along the lines of the people who were more prepared for it, who had a mm-hmm. realistic expectation of what a defensive encounter might look like, how it might end up, and what might happen mm-hmm. to them afterwards. Those mm-hmm. people tend to do a little bit better. But I think the important thing I want to point out is, if you know, assuming there's no big legal fallout, you know, and you didn't, you know, get seriously injured or lose a loved one or something like that, you know, it's a straight up, you defended yourself using some sort of force and prevailed. I think the people that already have a self-defense mindset are almost always going to do a little bit better in the aftermath, because the people who weren't planning on being assaulted or attacked or whatever, they hadn't had a single mental rep ever in their life. They'd either
right.
ignored the possibility of something bad happening to them or wished it away, or when they started thinking, I wonder what happened, I might get mugged here or whatever, like, nah, not going to think about that. Probably won't happen. And that's true. It probably won't happen. But the people that are thinking about it ahead of time, I think always tend to do better. So people watching your show, for example, are already in the 1%, you know, of people who are in the 2A firearms community and self-defense community, or the LEO community, because most cops don't get training outside of work, right? John likes to say that most people in America who buy a gun, God bless them, I'm glad they do, but they take the gun out, fiddle with it, don't learn anything about it, don't shoot it, maybe once, maybe never. They put it in a drawer or a safe or under the bed or wherever, and there it sits. And those people are always going to have a hard time. So if you're watching this show, if you get into the range regularly, you're in the 1% of all gun owners in the United States, which is good for you. It's a sad, sad fact that that's the case, but that is the case. So I think people who are, to answer your question for the third time, probably, because I tend to ramble, to answer your question, I think the people who are considering possibilities and considering scenarios and getting mental reps in and training are almost always going to be more prepared for the aftermath because they're more prepared for the incident. If that makes any sense at all.
It does make sense at all. Yeah. Thank you.
We talked about FLP. I wanted to point this out. FLP is your sponsor as well. I guess I didn't know that. They're good people. You know, I had a guy on who lived in Maricopa County in Phoenix who got into a shooting that, you know, had he had the wrong investigator, had he had the wrong prosecutor, it could have gone really poorly for him. What had happened was he had a former neighbor who was a convict, a parolee, you know, felon, whatever, stalking him. He tried to befriend the guy, tried to help him, didn't work out. The guy was literally stalking him, showing up at his place. And so this guy trained, he armed himself. He got security cameras around his house. So he has the entire thing on tape where at the last minute, the guy, he's pointing a gun at the guy. The guy's chasing him still, which is not good. The guy doesn't appear to be armed, but then he takes his shirt off and says something like, I'm going to take that gun and then lunges at him and our guy shoots. Okay. Justified shooting. Not your ideal circumstances, right? Your ideal circumstances is it's super duper clear that guy's armed and he's about to shoot me and I have to shoot him. Mm-hmm. That wasn't the case. So he had that on tape. Every part of that was on tape. In fact, it looks like he even tried to get the guy in front of the camera at one point to make sure everything was caught on tape. He spent $15,000 right out of the shoot. He wasn't even arrested. 15 grand wow. just to get started with a good lawyer who used to be a prosecutor up in that area. So I can't say enough about having legal protection ahead of time. Do your homework. Find a good company. We like Firearms Legal Protection. That is the best kind of insurance you can have. Because in those moments, in the unlikely event you have to use your firearm, in those moments afterwards when you're freaking out, because you're going to be, like, was that justified? Is what I did okay? Do I call the police? Who do I talk to? And you can call the police, call your FLP rep and be like, this just happened. And they'll be like, all right, calm down. Here's what you say. Here's what you don't say. Because the last thing you want after a shooting is to get diarrhea of the mouth with a police officer who may or may not be friendly to your position. Because the things you say in the immediate aftermath, those are documented. And so if 6 months, if a year down the road, when you're in a criminal trial or a civil trial, and something you say doesn't match those spontaneous, excited utterances you made immediately in the aftermath of a shooting, you're going to have a problem. You're going to have a real problem because it's going to look like your story changed. Yeah. Even though you weren't in a right frame of mind right afterwards. So that's my advice about that. Get yourself some firearms, some sort of protection. If it's not FOP, get something.
Yeah, absolutely. I totally agree. Are you good to go into Q&A, Mike? The time is flying by when you're having fun, right?
Yes. Just no questions from Chris Brady. I saw his name on the screen. Anyone?
Oh,
Chris Brady,
there's two. There were two in here. No, there's one. There's one in here from him. So.
No, I'm kidding. That's fine. You can be Chris.
Okay. All right. Laura wants to know, I missed the beginning. What is Mike's podcast called?
Ah, yes. The Active Self-Protection Podcast. Very cleverly named. yeah, we didn't think about calling it. I wanted to call it the Mike Williver Show, but John wasn't having any of that. So,
aww.
No, I'm just kidding. Yeah, had it not been, by the way, if you're going to start a podcast, affiliate yourself with a YouTube channel that has 2.7 million subscribers. It really helps. I can't say enough about it. I just don't think I would have as many followers if not for that. I'm kidding. Of course I would. Active Self-Protection Podcast. And we're up on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Overcast, Google Pod, all the main ones, all the major ones. And if you come over to the Extra channel, Active Self-Protection Extra on YouTube, you can catch back episodes. Be warned, it's still audio only, so it's only just a graphic of, you know, this basically, and my stupid voice talking for an hour.
Not stupid. Okay.
I see. All right. Chris Brady.
Well, speaking of him, here's his question. How can we prepare other than just saying to ourselves it can happen for the Adam for the PTS after an encounter?
that's actually a brilliant question. I'm shocked. I want to know who told Chris to ask that question. Anyway, no, all seriousness, we talk about spiritual and emotional, mental, physical fitness all the time. John Daub, I mentioned him earlier. He had a disturbed young man break through his front door, buck naked, at, you know, in middle of the morning with his, you know, his wife and children home. He had to protect them. And he talked a lot during the interview and afterwards. He talked a lot about being in good physical shape, just being, you know, having a regular workout routine and having that outlet helped him. I can't say enough about be right with your God, the people that you love. So if I died right now, live on your show of a heart attack, no one I know would wonder where I stood with them. No one, I wouldn't be like, oh no, I wish I would have told Adam Winch I loved him. You know, he already knows. And then furthermore, having done those mental reps ahead of time, visualizing things ahead of time, getting the training ahead of time, I think in my experience from the people I've talked to on the channel, absolutely has helped them work through this stuff. Because after the immediate aftermath of a shooting, when there's still gun smoke in the air and they're shaking and their blood's pumping and their adrenaline's dumping and they're thinking, what just happened? What am I going to do? The people that have prepared for that ahead of time are almost always going to do better. And it's, you can't avoid PTS. Not everyone gets it. People get it in varying degrees, more or less serious. Some people, it manifests in different ways. There's a bunch of different potential ways that it shows up in your life: hypervigilance, lost sleep, nightmares, just sort of worrying about things all the time, being jumpy, you name it. Those things, some of them are inevitable, but I think you can minimize them as much as they can be minimized by being prepared ahead of time, by considering what might happen and what might happen afterward ahead of time. I mean, it sounds shameless, but listen to my show, listen to these people's stories, and get a sense for what they went through so that you have some sort of frame of reference for if, God forbid, you're in a defensive encounter, you have some prep. It's not the first time you thought about this stuff, but that spiritual fitness and just the relationships that you have, the last thing you want on earth is to be on the losing end of a defensive encounter, God forbid. And you're bleeding out. And all you can think about is, man, I wish I'd have told my kids something. I wish I would have told my husband something. I wish I would have told my wife something. I wish I wouldn't have left on a sour note or whatever. That, unfortunately, losing a defensive encounter is in cards for absolutely everybody. The most switched on, locked on Navy SEAL dude can get killed feloniously by a bad guy. It can happen. You can't defend against every single thing. So, being right with people and in the event that something terrible happens and you are dying, you are bleeding out on a sidewalk somewhere, just know that your relationships are in the best shape they can possibly be to prevent. I can't imagine that last thought, you know, being that I was crappy to my kids or my wife or my granddaughter or left something unsaid. So I live every day having lost a couple of people very close to me very suddenly from suicide. Taught me the lesson that I don't want to leave anything unsaid or undone or any relationships unmended if they're mendable, if that makes any sense at all.
Yeah, that's absolutely necessary. I'm so glad that you said that you touched on that. I don't think that gets brought up enough. I don't think it gets talked about enough. And that's part of our mission at Defenders as well, is to bring awareness to all of these things. And yeah, tune in for more, guys, because there is so much more coming with Defenders Live and Defenders USA that is right in that vein that you're talking about. So I'm so glad that you brought that up, and it just can't be said enough. It really can't. So, okay. More questions here. Brent wants to know, do you have more LEO or civilian guests on your podcast?
More so far, it shakes out how it shakes out, right? I don't pick the guests. They come to me and either they have a compelling story or they don't. I would say it's 2/3 civilian, I'm guessing. I'd have to look over the list, but it's almost certainly more civilian than LE. And, you know, had LE guests reach out and the story wasn't good for the show. So I had to turn them down. But I'm genuinely more, I think the badge cam main channel stuff is more important. That stuff gets shown in roll calls and in LE training. So my words there are more impactful, I think. I really tend to focus more on private citizens, non-LE people on the podcast, but there is both. I'd say it's probably 2/3 non-LE, 1/3 LE, something like that. If I had to guess, that's a gross estimate.
Okay. Tori wants to know, what is the percentage of non-self-defenders that start training vigorously after an encounter?
My man, Tony, the truck driver. Dude, that's a great question. I mentioned you earlier. You might have caught that, Tony. I was talking to you. So what I love is how frequently people who either weren't self-defense minded before an incident or were, but maybe not enough, do that exact thing. They finish up and they're like, holy crap, this could happen. If it happened to me once, it could happen again. You know, something that Adam can tell you is probably true in his experience as well. Is like once a cop gets into a gunfight, it's almost guaranteed he or she's going to have another one before the end of their career. It's like they become this giant poop magnet, and it happens again. So if you've been in a self-defense encounter, gotten through it somehow by sheer luck or whatever, now is a good time to start training. You know, it's a good time to start training before something happens. But I've seen a lot of people come on and tell me, yeah, I had this thing happen. I wasn't really prepared, or I had trained, but not seriously, not hard enough. So I doubled down. So that's pretty common, Tony. Great question. Thanks for asking that. And I see you got Stephanie Weidner coming up on the 14th of December. Folks, tune in for that one. She's awesome. She's my boss. I have to say this thing about her.
Yes, she is coming up, and I'm adding more people to the list as well. So that list is going to grow, I hope. And I'm not going to be able to, I don't think, to get all the questions. We only have a minute left, but and I don't know if this is serious or not, but this is what it says. Mike has an incredible voice. You mind giving us a bit of it as well with my soul?
Is that a joke or is that real? But if you go to my Michael Williver is my little YouTube channel where I lead worship at church. So yeah, you can listen to that. Michael, youtube.com/Michael Williver, something like that. And it'll pop up, and all my church stuff and some non-church stuff pops up there as well. Yeah, I do sing and play the piano.
Well, I did not know that. I'm learning so much about you tonight. That's so great.
If you are on Spotify, you can go to Spotify, type in Mike Williver or Act of Self-Protection. It'll pop right up. If you're on Apple Podcasts, same thing. If you just Google Active Self-Protection Podcast, I'm sure various and sundry formats of it will pop up. And if folks have questions, I can't stick around and answer questions right now. However, if you have a question for me, hit me up, mike@activeselfprotection.com. I am the show. Other than getting guests, which I do most of that too, I'm the editor, I'm the producer, I'm the executive director, I'm the president and all that other stuff. So I answer my own email. So if you send me an email, it comes to me, I'll get it and I'll answer it as soon as I possibly can. So yeah, please do.
That would be great. That would be great because there's a couple there I wasn't able to get to. So, Mike, thank you again for coming on. I so appreciate your time. I appreciate your heart. I appreciate your insight. You're an inspiring man, and I'm totally rooting for you. I think what you're doing is great, and we really need you in this industry. So, thank you for what you do.
I appreciate those kind words. Folks in the comments, give Laura a quick round of applause. She's killing it. She's just starting out in this. And I got to tell you,
would you stop?
I was not at her level this early on. I'm really impressed. You're doing a great job. And that's not just the encourager, Mike. It's just true. You're doing a great job. I love it.
I didn't know there were levels.
Yeah. Yeah. Encourager Mike's not even here right now. He's another one of my personalities. Thank you. Thank you, Laura. I appreciate the kind words. I really do.